And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your regular host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voiced. It's August 22nd, and that's the world turned upside down. And the vision, of course, folks, that we embody here in our work, the voice of the Republic of Kannada and the resistance to tyranny. The world was given in common to everybody, not one having to have more of it than another. That no one has a natural authority over anyone else. We're born equal, and we're to live in harmony and share the earth in that way. Now, of course, the forces opposing that are at work all the time, the forces of greed, of oppression, of arbitrary rule of one over another, one over many, and a constant state of war. All of these tyrannies that we're facing now, it's like these two different forces at work all the time within us and in our world. Well, our show today is about why you shouldn't vote. Especially in Canada, there's been a federal election called on September 20th, just 2 years after the last one, because it looks like Justin Trudeau is a bit nervous. He has already been indicted for war crimes. He's admitted to genocide. He's in the pocket of the Chinese, allowing them to even station their troops in Canada. And now, of course, he's trying to pull off an election to say, look, everyone ratifies my actions in setting up a COVID police state. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about today about the reasons why you shouldn't vote. And it's very much related to the guest I have with me, Owen Lucas. He's a common law freedom fighter from England. He's living in Wales right now. Recently, he was thrown in jail for 6 weeks for making a comment on Facebook. And we're going to talk to him in a few minutes. You can follow our work, murderbydecree.com, Republic of Kannada, K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofkannada.ca. And write to us, angelfire101@protonmail.com. A technical note, too. Some of you have been writing and saying, how do I find the icon to listen to the show at bbsradio.com/whowestand? Well, it'll be up as of next week. Today, if somebody is looking for it, go to the left-hand side of that page when it comes up, and under Station 1 and 2, you'll see in small lettering other options for listening. Just hit that, and then you'll see the icon. Hit Station 1, and you can hear us. This is going out globally and syndicated all over the place. And one of the things that we're going to be talking about today, of course, is along the lines of not voting, because it's in Canada or Kannada, it's really clear that for many years, the same kind of regime has been taking place. And I want to start with a couple of really relevant quotes. The first is, and they're both from the same year, 1832, in Upper Canada, now Ontario. And the first is a quote from my great-great-great-grandfather, Philip Annett. He was a farmer, a blacksmith, a staunch Baptist who refused to support the Church of England with his taxes, and he took up arms and tried to overthrow the British Crown in Canada in the famous 1837 rebellion. R-1776, that's written out of the history books, and they try to swab that out of our memory because our attempted Republican Revolution failed. But just before that, Philip Annett wrote back to his family in Wiltshire, England, and he wrote this in a letter. You must all come to Canada while you have a chance. Here is an excellent land that can bear any crop. Here you have no rent to pay, no poor rates, and scarcely any taxes. No gamekeepers or lords over you. Here you can have every good thing. Here is a land of liberty and plenty where we are held in respect by our neighbors. And we aim to keep it so. Well, guess what? Philip took up arms to defend that dream, and the dream carried on. Fortunately, he evaded the hangman, and otherwise I wouldn't be here today, folks. But it kind of contrasts with another quote by William Lyon Mackenzie, where he's describing the problem in Canada between the Liberals and, well, they used to be called Whigs, then they became Liberals. But he's referred to the two main parties, which are still running Canada like a dictatorship. He says, quote, Whigs and Tories are neither more nor less than two factions of wealthy and influential men who have conspired to plunder the great body of the people time about, the Whigs taking the helm when the Tories become too detestable to be endured, and going below whenever Toryism had got a refreshed character by a few years' pretended opposition to misrule, unquote. In other words, thing one and thing two, it's the same way here, folks. It doesn't matter who you vote for. On September 20th, Liberals or Tories, they both support the COVID police state, as do all the other main parties. They both support the Foreign Investment Protection Act, which allows China to buy up the whole country and to even station their troops here. Also, when you vote in Canada, every member of parliament and every official in Canada takes an oath of allegiance to guess who? Queen Elizabeth and her descendants, not to the people, not to the Constitution. So when you vote, you're committing an act of treason. You're handing over authority to representatives of a criminally convicted foreign monarch called Elizabeth Windsor. That's the first reason you shouldn't vote. You're handing over authority to a foreign power. So that's an act of treason. The second act of treason, of course, is the Liberals and Tories are in the pocket of the Chinese, whose investment in Canada has increased 15 times in the last decade, and who now effectively own the West Coast. Third reason is this is a criminally convicted regime. Trudeau has admitted to genocide. He belongs in jail, not running the country. And, you know, the very fact that the COVID tyranny and police state is operating right now, and they've called a snap election after 2 years, means they're trying to get a ratification of everything they're doing. And if you do that, you're simply saying, yes, I approve all of the tyrannical activity going on. Here's an example. I just got a very urgent message from a mother in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. Well, guess what? Her 9-year-old daughter, Emma, is the one child in her school who will not wear a mask. Emma has been segregated by the teacher, forced to sit at the back of the classroom. When she raises her hand, the teacher ignores her. The teacher tells the other children to ignore her and to shun her in the hall. This is happening to a 9-year-old child by a teacher in a Sault Ste. Marie elementary school. Now, you know, this is unconscionable, and it shows you the climate, the sick, tyrannical climate we're in. Well, we refuse to vote under those circumstances because it's to vote with a gun to your head. And don't forget, in contract law, when you vote under, make any decision under duress, it's null and void. All of the agreements are off, especially in a genocidal regime like ours. There are no more agreements or obligations to these authorities. We have the Republic of Canada to rely on. That's why we're switching allegiance. So that's kind of in a nutshell. position on the whole thing. That's why you shouldn't go vote. You should, if you're going to go in there, mark on your ballot Republic of Canada. Write to us at republicofcanada@gmail.com. You can learn a lot more at the republicofcanada.ca website. Here's what you need to do instead of voting. Form a local cell or an assembly, sign, get a charter from the Republic. 12 or more people sign a charter and you become a governing local assembly. You're not part of Canada anymore, and I've done this. You show your citizenship card to police. You say, that's fine, but you can bring in any measures you like, but I'm not part of your country. I'm under a different jurisdiction, so you have no authority over me. It's that simple. And time and again, when we've done that, the police have backed off. So this is the power we have under a common law republic. We'll talk more about that a bit later, but I want to give Owen the chance to come on. Owen, are you there? Hello, Owen. Well, Owen Lucas was on. I don't know, Don, if you brought him on yet or not. He was calling.
Hi, Kevin. Can you hear me?
Oh, hi. Hi, Owen. Are you there?
Okay, hi. Sound check.
Okay. Fine. It's good to have you. I've given people a brief introduction, but say something about who you are and what happened to you recently when they put you in jail and why that whole thing happened.
Yeah, sure. I was quite a conventional guy for many decades until about 6 years ago. I got married into a family that were Duchy of Cornwall, which is pretty much Prince Charles's estate here in the UK. And I perhaps naively started getting interested in the Diana death and posted online a documentary which was pretty scathing against the royals. And the other thing that came into my attention at that time, I was teaching in a prep school, which is a private school, a boarding school for a lot of Spanish kids coming over, a very sort of aristocratic feel to the place. And I came across a lot of old pupils, old alumni of the school, who were swapping stories and horror stories, anecdotes about some sexual abuse of the school that we sent our youngsters to the senior school, so what you might call the middle school to the upper school, and so I felt this was a very important thing to talk about in the staff room the next morning when I went in, but I got this sort of cold shoulder vibe to it, and I think those two incidents back in 2014 were the catalyst and prompt for me being framed in a very similar way to yourself, Kevin. I've read your books, and you know that whole going at your custody of your kids and your status as a parent very much happened to me in the winter of 2014-2015. You know, potentially, it's intuitive to me, seems like those two incidents were the catalyst to it. But my mother-in-law and my wife at the time very much pulled the rug from under my feet, shall we say. So I then, from 2014-2015 onwards, went on this journey of discovery, which I think, you know, with this COVID era we're in now, a lot of people are, I'm seeing a lot of parallels to where I was back then to how people are now, in terms of, you know, surely this can't be really happening. The authorities that I've trusted for, you know, since I was a kid are now, you know, seemingly very suspicious and very dubious. And so I then began looking at the legal situation. I very much got into common law when I realized what a sham the whole law situation was. And I've gradually been, you know, researching and getting myself into a position where I can contest. But, you know, as this is why I'm such a big fan of the Republic of Canada, because it's exactly the way to do it, to step outside of their jurisdiction, as you just mentioned, and then, you know, right, put a flag in the turf and make your stand from there.
Mm-hmm. Now tell us, what landed you in jail on?
Say again?
What landed you in jail? How come they arrested you?
So on the surface of it, it was connected with, as you mentioned, a Facebook comment. And that they toyed with me, if you like, you know, told me to come to this court case, which was in North Wales, a long way away from where I am, couldn't make it, logistically impossible. So they had me for contempt of court and they locked me up for 6 weeks. But you go back to the catalyst there, the initiating point of the Facebook comment, which is very much connected with the work of a child protection campaigner over here. He's from London. His name's Wilfred Wong. I really recommend your viewers and listeners check him out. He's a brilliant, brave guy, you know, 30 years of campaigning against, you know, some of these occult networks that are gradually coming to the surface now, steadily coming to the surface now. And so I suggested that this child that he was looking to help with the mother and the aunt, interestingly left out by all the mainstream media reports, the fact that he was with the mother of this child. And so because I was disclosing and exposing the information that Wilfred Wong was, he was currently in prison at the time. He was arrested for conspiracy to kidnap with the mother, as I keep mentioning, because it's so important. And when you get to know what Wilfred Wong is about, you know, it's one of those inverted travesty of justice where, you know, this really noble and morally upstanding character is being pitched as a you know, a kidnapper of children by a transnational right. criminal organization, you know, the British authorities, as similar with the Canadian authorities. And so my gut feeling on it is that because I was in support of Wilfred Wong and this perhaps high profile case in North Wales on the island of Anglesey, that they came at me similarly. And when I was in prison, I wonder if that's important, that the timing when his court case came up after 9 months of being incarcerated without any evidence against him, they've eventually put him on trial. And I think this is part of his thing. He wanted to get it on record that all his evidence that he had on this case. And while I was in there, his court case kicked up. And I was in synchronization. So they clamped it down. They put all the clampers down as hard as they could on no information about what was said, you know, as the common law must be, everything must be public and there must be press galleries and everything for the mandate of the people to look at. But this is all totally secretive. They've hushed it up as best as they can. So the details of this Wilfred Wong case currently are fascinating. And there's an awful lot of interest over here as to what's really going on with this case, because it seems like he may have, you know, he spent 30 years trying to get newspapers to write articles about him in vain. And perhaps he was wanting the exposure of being arrested, because he's a globally recognized and celebrated child campaigner protection right. guy, particularly with SRA, Satanic Ritual Abuse. Perhaps he was laying some breadcrumbs for the noise, the stink right. that he's been arrested for us to get right. into that and have a look at it.
Let me just go back a bit on and tell listeners exactly what you wrote on Facebook that they took offense to. What was the comment that you wrote?
So when you get into the details of this thing, there's a little boy that this rescue team with Wilfred Wong and the mother and the aunt were going to rescue this child. And I suggested that in support of Wilfred Wong, because he was in prison at the time, this is kind of end of December, January, turn of the year this year, I was saying, you know, this clearly is a very important case. Wilfred Wong has, you know, sacrificed a lot to go for this one, and I was saying that this child's name should be, I think I said, plastered around the streets, you know, milk cartons, and you know, we need to up the ante and exposure of this case. And I ended up in a police station.
You said 10 days went by, and then the police contacted you
right.
and told you were violating a non-disclosure order, and then they started turning up the harassment even more.
Right.
Why do you think that happened?
Started off softly. No charge. Just don't use that boy's name again. There's a non-disclosure order. But the end, you know, it started building. There's a momentum with it. And, I was arrested, extracted from my partner's house and taken up to a police station. He had a long day in a prison with, you know, swabs inserted into me without my permission or consent, you know, really strange kind of photo booth that they put me in for 20 minutes. Very strange, you know, gave me a headache for a few days afterwards. And late night, you know, interviews, didn't get home till 1 a.m. And then these court cases that they wanted me to attend, they'd have me on this online portal thing, and then they'd shut me off and say adjourn for another time until the third one.
Go back a bit. Sorry, Owen. Just, you said they sure. swabbed you without your permission. Exactly what did they do?
They wanted a DNA sample. So they put this swab thing, you know, the back of my mouth. And
they forced it in. They held you down and forced it.
I said I don't consent to this, and they said, "Well, if you don't consent to it, we're going to do it by force." So rather than get the heavies in, I opened my mouth, but you know, it was totally against my consent. And you see this.
Why did they require a DNA test if they're just talking to you?
Yeah, there was no explanation. You know, there's a lot of talk over here, and trying to keep up with the Australian situation too, that there's a real sort of draconian heavy-handedness arriving with the police these days now. You know, I was they laid siege to my flat when they finally arrested me. I was harassed by, I think it was 6 policemen, and they threatened to bust down my door if I didn't open it. I was cuffed and thrown in the wagon, and then 6 weeks in a prison. You know, it's heavy-handed stuff, intimidation on a big scale.
So you're in from June 16th to July 29th, you said.
That's right.
During that time. What was it like for you in prison? I mean, how was it for you?
It was an eye-opener. A lot of fascinating characters in there. You know, I felt like I was quite lucky. My cellmate was a good guy, and, you know, he sees what's going on in the world in terms of COVID hoax and that kind of stuff. And, him being a big tough guy and a good friend quite quickly was quite reassuring. But it's a cold atmosphere, very sterile, you know, no plants, no organics. It's, food was absolutely terrible. And it's, you know.
What prison was it?
Swansea.
What prison did they have you
in? Yeah, it's Swansea in Southwest Wales.
Swansea, yeah.
Yeah.
Was it regular police who did it, or a special group, or?
Yeah, I'm not certain on the personnel involved on that front, but Yeah, it was quite consistent. And there was they eventually arrested me in the daytime, but I'd had a few nights before where the police had turned up at 1 in the morning, you know, shining torches through the window, knocking on my door, waking up my neighbors, this kind of thing. You know, it was quite it's quite intimidating. For they even went to my mother's house, you know, 10 miles down the road, and they knocked on her door, got her up in the middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning, and started questioning her about me. You know, very very, very strange.
So, do you think this is simply from one comment on Facebook, or because they had already had you tagged because of, you know, the stuff you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, you know, I've got a website, commonlawnews.com, and you know, constantly pushing the docket, if you like, in terms of what's going on. You know, I've been able to see through it for a few years now, and I'm very keen to help others see what's going on. So, you know, I'm probably, from their perspective, best shut up in a cell. You know, I'm not.
Well, yeah, I mean, Owen, it's not unusual, because I just had a woman on the other day, a Native woman from British Columbia, and she's been under house arrest for 3 months simply because she's advocating sovereignty for her own nation and told the police to get off her land. So, I mean, they target people who stand on their own sovereignty very much.
Yeah, they do. And I wonder how much they want to make those people into an example to, you know, people who are less committed, and say, you don't want to go down that direction, otherwise, you know, you'll get the same heavy hand. But I feel like there's a sort of contradiction, irony, from their perspective, because you saw this in prison quite a lot, that there's all this, you know, kind of softly, you know, nicely, politically correct, tick all the boxes, you know, diversity and this kind of stuff, that they have to pretend that they're right. You know, caring and altruistic, when really what they're doing is their, you know, heavy-handed intimidation stuff from way back in history.
Yep.
It's a contradiction and a hypocrisy from their perspective that I think, you know, it makes it very difficult for them to carry out what they want to do, because they have to, you know, do the PR machine and the show that they're caring and righteous and, you know, everything they're not.
Yeah, you know, these experiences always open our eyes quickly. And tell me how you're feeling now in terms of your own work, common law. I mean, how has it left you feeling, this whole experience?
Well, I think, you know, it's everything's coming to a crescendo here. We've got this global, you know, takeover attempt, this control network that's trying to impose itself under this medical scam. And so, you know, it's all coming to a place where I'm feeling that there's, you know, you hear phrases like the paradigm shift, but it feels like there's something brewing here, you know, that there's a flip perhaps coming. You know, can't do the chronology or the details on what's happening, but it's quite exciting from my perspective, because it feels like there's a clearing about to arrive with it, that the exposure and the disclosure of this ancient regime, you know, whether you're talking about the crown or the subsidiary networks, you know, your privy councils and your Knights of Malta and all these kind of, you know, networks and cults are coming up, and there seems like there's a wholesale understanding and appreciation that there are forces at work other than, you know, the face of the government at the window dressing of the corporation, and yeah. For me, that's really exciting. You know, you hear people talking about the infrastructure problems, where supermarkets are much emptier than they used to be. So people are talking about, you know, food gardens and common law and, you know, setting up assemblies so that, you know, the natural law can be irrigated from below, as opposed to this nonsense trickle down idea from the top. I mean, economics too is another one that looks like it's all set for a big change. So, you know, even though there's a lot of chaos and you know, it's a little uncertain and unfamiliar as to where we are, it's an exciting time. And I think it's the Chinese glyph for crisis is a combination of danger and opportunity, right?
Yes, good point. Yeah, I find that all over. People are waking into that, and it's birth pains, right? It's birth pains of a new world.
And birth pains,
exactly. Well, the old one is going down. I think these measures, you know, when they come down on you so hard, like they have on any of us, it's an act of desperation on their part, you know, I think.
I agree. I feel like there's a Last Chance Saloon, you know, vibration from these authorities. The people are far more awake and aware and on it than I think they anticipated. You know, 9/11 seemed to work okay for them. They got away with that, no problems. But this one, very different response, I think, from the global population. And I think we've caught them on the hop a bit. It's moving nicely in our direction, I think.
Tell us how things are. And you're in Wales now, aren't you?
Yeah, West Wales.
How are things there just in terms of daily life in England? The restrictions, the monitoring, that kind of thing?
The comparison I've been drawing the most is with Australia, which is wintertime, of course. So our summer, we have less of the, you know, the tyrannical enforcements of masks, but it seems like as winter's arriving, and as we see in Australia at the moment, that they're hoping that their agenda chronology is going to increasingly clamp down. A lot of talk of the passport now, so you know, COVID is certificate of vaccination ID, right? And so they've got their agenda and their timetable, I think, that they're trying to stick to. But, you know, you see so many protesters. You know, London's been absolutely inundated with protesters. You know, we've had literally millions of people marching through the streets of London. And although they're still in that arena of protesting, which is acknowledging the authority above them, right? That's gonna develop. They're gonna appreciate how futile it is to invite and request and apply to these bought and paid for stooges to do anything, you know, with common sense. And so that's gonna develop now, I think, into a place of frustration to anger and then to action. I you can feel it too.
Yeah,
I'll say again.
People, they see there's nothing to appeal to anymore. There's no government really. This all of the extension of the big machine, right?
Right, and your regular rank and file, because of this pandemic narrative, are asking the big questions that they didn't really need to 2 years ago. Now they do need to, because the businesses are falling over. You know, the elderly and the infirm are suspiciously dying in care homes and all this kind of thing. So, you know, so many more people, they've almost forced the hand, you know, by these draconian measures of waking everybody up. You know, the numbers are just exponentially increasing. It's really exciting.
Well, you know, I had a friend the other day who's he's been very adamant about, convinced that there's a virus out there and we've got to take the shot and all that. And then he stumbled across this statistic that the Center for Disease Control themselves put out 3 years ago. And, you know, it said that these viruses, their ability to determine whether, in fact, you're sick from this virus or not is only about 5% accurate. So in other words, we're just saying there's a 95% chance that their test results are inaccurate. And the minute he saw that, he thought, what have I been doing? It's like the scales fell from his eyes, right?
Yeah. The science is being picked apart over here. You know, I don't know if your listeners listen to David Icke, but you get into the details of how they've pulled this one, and they haven't even got a reference point to the virus itself. So you can't test against something unless you've got a sample reference of a virus in a petri dish, right? And they don't even have that. These you know, serious scientists have been writing to and applying to the government saying, show us your proof. They can't provide anything. So, you know, base one question, is there even a virus? You know, is this some kind of hoax just to call in the draconian measures?
I think there's a sickness, you know, but I think half of it is psychological. I mean, the society is going psychotic, and it tends to go from the top down. The craziest people tend to be at the top, you know, not the bottom. You know, there was a ludicrous article I mentioned in the show last week on the front page of the Vancouver Province newspaper. It said police dogs can now sniff out people with the virus. So I'm thinking, how the hell can a dog find something the medical science can't. I mean, it's crazy.
I mean, there's so many anecdotes like that, right? There was an African president, and he submitted with a human name a pawpaw, the DNA from a pawpaw fruit, and a goat, and they both came back positive, you know, with the virus.
Right.
And, you know, there's all these kind of crazy anecdotes just blowing it out of the water. The guy who invented this test, the PCR test, a guy called Cary Mullis, M-U-L-L-I-S, and he stated categorically that this test is not to be used to diagnose infectious diseases. And all these numbers that, you know, the media stations throw at us to frighten us come from this PCR test, which the inventor said, don't use this for infectious diseases.
Right.
You know,
Owen, have you had any more threats recently? What's your situation? I mean, you out on probation, or what is your situation now?
Well, when I got released from the trial on the 29th, they assured me that there wouldn't be any afters in terms of probation. But in fact, I am sort of seemingly in that system at the moment, that I've had a meeting and, you know, get a few phone calls here and there. So I you know, from a war situation, you know, a bit of covering fire to keep my head down, right?
Right. Yeah. Are you, like, you know, you mentioned you've got a website. Tell us a little bit about the other work you do, and are you getting a response in England? I know there's people there. I mean, it's the birthplace of common law. You'd think this stuff would have a hearing there, right?
Well, I also started up, as well as the website, a couple of Facebook groups, and particularly with the common law theme, a local one here in West Wales, the Tyvee Common Law Assembly, but also connected with the Wilfred Wong scenario that I've been following. I've, like you, lost all custody for my children, so I'm very interested in the human rights of children. So that's area of research got me interested in these occult networks and the child abuse and brutality that comes through those. So I also set up the Satanic Ritual Abuse Worldwide Facebook group, and that's really taken off. You know, that's had hundreds and hundreds of people joining up to it. And similarly, the local one, the local assembly one here too, has recently been picking up. There's quite an interesting situation in this local town. The council, because of the COVID measures, have basically handed over their representative authority to what they call a gold command, which is kind of like, you know, emergency war measures that they're trying to impose. So the whole town layout has gone skewer from there. They're sending these road systems completely haywire, and there's a huge protest locally in the town because of the road layout that they've for some reason decided to change. They've cut off the high street, et cetera, et cetera. But that's, I think, pushed a few people again towards the common law. And so, you know, you see this kind of tiptoe, step by step, incremental move away from the trust in, you know, the established legal system that people grew up with, towards, you know, something new, something different, something fair, something just. So it's all happening.
People learning self-reliance, you know, that it's got to begin with ourselves, right?
Yeah, that's right. And as opposed to offloading the sovereignty and the autonomy to, you know, the Crown Corporation or the local council or whoever it is, you know, people are beginning to realize that they've got to find their centering and grounding of themselves. You're right. Very much so.
Well, because, you know, all these things are fictions anyway. Corporations, governments, they're all make-believe. They're just people, right?
Well, I've just been having a look at your book today before coming on, Establishing Liberty, the Case for Kanata. And I was very much looking at the way that the Crown has become a corporation now. So my incarceration for 6 weeks, I was thinking, is sort of the equivalent, as a comparison, you know, as McDonald's or Starbucks or, you know, Volkswagen or something, sending their security guards over because they didn't like something I've said, you know, freedom of speech, human rights. and they've locked me in a toilet cubicle for 6 weeks, you know, as a corporation. It's very much the same. Except those guys have a bit more legitimacy to them because they haven't been found guilty as a transnational criminal organization.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's true. It's kind of like when I got deported from England 10 years ago, the group that did it was not the UK Border Agency. It was a company called Reliance Limited who run the borders. And they obviously make money for everybody to deport. You know, it's like private prisons. It's a, you know, a meat market. So, I mean, this is the corporatized world we're dealing with, not governments, but these corporate entities, which that's the thing. They have no contract with us, so they have no authority over us. It's a simple thing to remember. But when you're dealing with corporate bodies, show us the contract. If you can't, no authority over us. Goodbye. You know.
Right, and it has to have an individual signature to it, right? They can't just say it's the corporation. You've got to have a specific person, right? And the meat market, you use the phrase, you know, humans are really increasingly becoming commodities. You see it with the private prisons. You know, it's like a hotel, £44,000 annually to keep a regular prisoner. You know, it's great money if you can get it. But also with the family law courts, which, you know, is a global problem, where children are the commodity, right? And you know, you cleave up a family, and the lawyers and the social service people and all these professionals, you know, their incomes depend on the trafficking of children, you know, via state-sponsored agencies such as the courts, right?
Right. Owen, I want you to ask if you have any. We've got about 5 minutes, and then I've got to do a few more announcements. But any other final messages? The thing about the satanic ritual, I want you back on to talk about that because we've had other survivors of that on from the Mormon Church, the Catholic Church. One of the few counselors in Canada who's allowed to practice satanic ritual counseling. I'd love to have kind of a table around the table conversation with all of you about this whole thing and the movement to stop it. So anything you want to say now to things you haven't
mentioned? Wait, just to clarify, did you say someone's got permission to do that? He's been given permission.
There's two counselors in Canada who, Sandra Fecht is the name of one of them in Ontario. And then there's a woman on the West Coast. They had to get permission from their professional body to even delve into, to even use the term satanic ritual. And then they came down on our monitor very closely, and the police refused to even acknowledge there's SRA at all. So she's faced a lot of opposition. A few years ago, it's in my archive shows, the interview with her, but I'd love to, you know, broaden this because there's cultic implications for all of this, just like the residential school genocide or anything. You know, the Catholic child trafficking, it's all got that cultic involvement, and we need to go into that more.
Yes, it's very influential, I think, and important. You're right. On that one, there's another very important case over here, which maybe you've heard of. There's a mother called Samantha Baldwin. Does that name ring a bell?
No, I know the Holy Greed case, but not her.
She's just written a book on her experiences and her saga. It's called Everything Is Going to Be Okay. Okay, spelled as the word would be OKAY, by Samantha Baldwin. I think you can get it online with the usual Amazon things. But she, in fact, I've done a couple of interviews with her, so I kind of know her socially. And one of the interesting things about my case just now with the 6 weeks in prison was that they specified that I was not to speak directly with Samantha Baldwin, but she's got absolutely nothing to do with the Wilfred Wong case. So really interesting that was brought in, because her book is
that was
very
a condition of you. They ordered you not to communicate with her.
Yeah, they gave me a list of people not to communicate with, and Samantha Baldwin was on that list. And she's very important with the satanic ritual abuse stuff, because her two little boys disclosed a lot of evidence to her and her mum, the boy's grandmother, about the whole culture of satanic cults and networks. And the authorities went very hard on her, and even though she was in the courtroom trying to prosecute her husband and the boy's father, who had been named by the boys as a satanic ritual abusing perpetrator. But they flipped it in the court. So, you know, she started the court case in the right. prosecution chair and ended up in the defendant's chair when they flipped the whole thing around. And she then took her sons and went on the run and hid, you know, because she could see what was going on here and the writing was on the wall. They had Sky International News broadcasters telling the world and everybody that she was this crazy mum who'd gone on the run with right. these two kids
to avoid.
Yeah, it's a really seminal case, I think.
Had you ever mentioned her name when the cops were interrogating you? Had you ever mentioned her name to them?
No, I don't think so. I mean, she's on my website and I've done videos with her, as I say, but I don't think, you know, connected okay. with.
So the very fact that they said don't communicate with her is a clue. It's a big clue coming from them.
Yeah, you know, I thought
tripped
so.
Over that, something that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
That really pricked my ears up when she was on the list, because she really has absolutely no connection to this whole Wilfred Wong case.
Try to get a hold of her and bring her on the show. Love to have her on.
Yeah, she's very impactful speaker too. She's good.
Good. Okay, so give us your website again, and if there's a way you want people to contact you, because we have people in England, they should be in touch with you. Any info you
want
to share?
Yeah, the website's obviously just getting out of jail. This is a couple of months dormant, but it's commonlawnews.com. And there's a couple of good Kevin Annett posts as well, which people might like if they're watching this radio show.
Great. Owen, you're a good man. You're a brave man, and I want to have you at me back on, brother. Any final words for the listeners?
We're talking about viruses and contagious. You know, it's the courage that becomes contagious because of inspirational characters. And, you know, I read your book, Unrelenting, in 2015, and it really galvanized and focused me into the direction that things needed to go. So I'm fully on board with breaking away from these stagnant, defunct infrastructural regimes that have been, you know, corrupting our species for decades, if not centuries, perhaps even millennia. And so, you know, it is there's butterflies in the stomach, so to speak, because, you know, it's a little uncertain at the moment. But I'm optimistic. I think people are coming together now, and the mandate of the people, we the people, you know, unstoppable. Powerful, most powerful force on the planet. Here we go.
That's right, brother. Thank you so much, Owen, for being on. And I'm going to talk to you very soon, in a few days offline. We can talk more, make some more plans.
Smashing. Cheers, Kevin. All the best.
Thank you, brother. All the best.
Take care.
That was Owen Lucas speaking to us from Wales, freedom fighter, and brothers and sisters who come on this show and tell that kind of story. I hope they give you a new spirit so that you're able to stand in our ranks. This is not a time to be nervous. We're not descended from timid men and women. All of us have a very great ancestry of people who survived this, who endured. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have survived a lot of bullshit, a lot of attacks. And there's a reason for that. When we go through things and get harder and stronger, it's so that we can help, not only help others, but refashion the society so this stuff doesn't happen again. We have the seeds of a new society everywhere. Here in Canada, I want to remind people, do not vote on September 20th. Pull out of the system. Don't do it on an individual basis. Simply, you know, say, announcing, I'm not going to vote. I'm not going to pay taxes. We have to take it to another level. So the way you resist is in a collective way. Get your neighbors together. Read our material at republicofcanada.ca. And sign a charter for the Republic. 12 or more men and women can sign it. At that point, you become a legislator. You become a legislative body. You can pass your own local laws, enforce them with your own courts and your own sheriffs. We've started that process, and I'm telling you, it goes up and down, but every time it comes up again after a down, it's at a higher level. There's a greater level of involvement. There's a greater level of awareness and sophistication on the veterans who've survived all the attacks and all the smear campaigns, and now we're building actively. And this attempt by the Trudeau government to hold a snap election, again, is a sign of their weakness. They want to get a public ratification of what they're doing, and if the Conservatives beat them, it's the same hand puppets, the same body, different name, the same corporate actors. So it really doesn't matter who you vote for. You mark your ballot, you're committing treason, you're voting for the Crown of England, not for the people of Canada. We are saying to the police and everybody in Canada who's in an official position, stand down from your oath of allegiance to Queen Elizabeth. Take the oath of membership, citizenship in the Republic. Say we are pledged to a constitution. And don't forget, from July 1st to 4th in Vancouver, the Republic and their delegates held a convention that adopted a constitution. You can see that at republicofcanada.ca. Look under Documents of the Republic. You'll see the ratified constitution. That is the highest law of the Republic. There is no sovereign in our world. There's no one sovereign, whether it's king or pope or president or anyone, prime minister. The people are sovereign. They govern themselves. You know, people have come along and suddenly declared themselves. There was this woman in the news who everyone's quoting now. She's saying, oh, Romana, or I can't remember the woman's name, Romana Romalo or whatever she is. She's now she's the new Queen of Canada. And I jokingly say to people, well, I used to work in a psych ward when I was putting myself through seminary. And I met a lot of people who thought they were the Queen of Canada and Napoleon and whoever, right, on the schizophrenic ward. But I mean, you know, just because somebody announces that, the whole idea is ridiculous because we don't have sovereigns over us. We, the people, are sovereign. There is no authority over us except what we establish ourselves. There's one conscience that is our sovereign. We live under our own conscience, and the law is derived from that. That's the nature of a republic, a self-governing republic where power begins at the local level. That's what we're setting up. And that's why we stay off the radar as we build in local communities. You may not see a lot of us on the internet. We made a deliberate policy and decision not to have much of an internet profile because it's heavily monitored. The real work happens on the ground. And any of you listening, it's in your hands to take the next step. Contact us, republicofcanada@gmail.com, angelfire101@protonmail.com. You can also leave messages for me on this number, and I know people have warned me not to give up my number, but look, times are pressing, people. My number to contact me is 236-380-4508. That's 236-380-4508, because my emails are continually filled with, of course. And contact me directly if you want to be involved in the movement for the Republic. And we will carry it from there. The initiative and everything is in your hands. As Owen Lucas mentioned, our book, Establishing Liberty, The Case for Canada, you can get that online at Amazon.com along with my 17 other books. And I just want to thank everybody as well for hanging in there in these times. The people who do hang in now are the ones, they're not the Sunshine Patriots. They're the winter soldiers, the Valley Forge ones who go through the deep winter of struggle and loss and come out in the springtime when we will create our republic and it'll blossom a hundredfold than the way it is now. So I want to thank all of you who are hanging in there with us. Important to read the background to all of this, murderbydecree.com, the reason why we broke ties with the Crown in the first place, because it's a convicted genocidal body. The Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches have been ordered off our territory. There's, you'll see on our websites, the 9 Indigenous nations whose elders, traditional elders, ordered those 3 churches off their territories. Those properties of these convicted criminal churches can now be seized lawfully. Any Catholic, Anglican, or United Church can be seized and the property taken over and their assets seized because they're transnational criminal organizations under international law that killed over 60,000 children and are now, through their fake mass grave investigations, they're actually pulping and destroying the evidence of their own crime scene. The RCMP and the churches that did those crimes are now going in and destroying that crime scene. So that's the reason why we need the Republic. We need our own investigations. Write to us again, republicofcanada@gmail.com, angelfire101@protonmail.com, and yours truly. Call me, 236-380-4508. Also, because I am this month, and final announcement, I'm beginning a national speaking tour, actually, hopefully a continental-wide speaking tour. on the history of this movement, genocide in Canada, the real story, and building the Republic now on the ground. I'll be holding organizing workshops, training leaders in the Republic, all of that, a citizenship school we're setting up for new citizens, what it means to be a citizen of the Republic. All of that is going to be in the tour I'm going to be doing. So contact me directly, book me into your community, we'll be there, and we'll do it, brothers and sisters. Now, the final song here, of course, is one of my favorites. It's Farewell to the Crown, and that's, of course, our agenda. The crown is actually already nullified. The best way to resist these people is by ignoring them and focusing on the new society we're building on the ground.
Just
final message also.
Someone.
There's somebody who's been trying to get a hold of our movement. I just want to say that our emails are being routinely sabotaged, so please feel free to use my phone until we can get a more secure system. But until then, I want to, next week, I want to invite all of you to tune in regularly. This is where you stay, keep abreast about all of our activities. And go to murderbydecree.com, read the books, read the history. It's the best way to be informed. So until next week, brothers and sisters, stay strong, stay clear. This is Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice from the sovereign territory of the Republic of Kanata. Carry it on.